Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
It is always a pleasure to welcome back the outstanding Neil Coulong. My good friend, thank you so much for your time today. What, do I get him there? There we go. I think I get you now. Hello, Neil.
Am I here now?
Yes. You've been there the entire time. The question is, did I have the ability to reel you in?
Well, 15 seconds ago, I was happy to be here, and I'm still happy to be here now. So
perfect.
We're all good.
That's what we do. How on the face of the earth are the Pittsburgh Steelers 3-2? I watched that team, and there's no way they should be 3-2.
I don't know, but... is this not the same thing we've been saying over the last three seasons now?
Yeah.
It the only thing they do well is win games. And I initially had said that as like a joke, and it was like 2 years ago, but it's the truth. I mean, to be fair, the defense went off the rails in the second half. I mean, that was one of the best half performances I think they've had in quite a while. It was impressive to see. Definitely took a big step forward with that. But offensively, snap to snap, you don't know what they're doing or why they're doing it. They should not be a 3-2 team. But the funny thing is, it the manner in which these games are being played, I don't think they've played a good game out of five. And I can make as many arguments that they should be 1-4 as I can they should be 4-1.
Right.
And once again, we just have no sense of who this team is. But as a coach, and I said this about Baltimore leading into the game, Harbaugh will eventually decide that he wants to play it safe against Pittsburgh's defense. And what's going to happen is they're going to take it away from him. If you give them the opportunity to play the game in the muck, they're going to take you down there, and they are more than comfortable winning that way. If they have to block a punt through the end zone to win, if that's going to get the ball back to them, and then from there, if their offense makes one play the entire game, it's going to be the biggest play of the game, and you're going to find yourself on the losing end of a game you had no business losing. And John Harbaugh, of all people, should know that because the Steelers have done that something four or five times the last 3 years to them. It's crazy the amount of times they have been able to beat Baltimore, largely because the Ravens don't want to play above the Steelers' level. And I don't mean talent-wise. I just mean Jackson threw well. You know, they dropped a bunch, and that doesn't help. But
right.
They did plenty to win that game until they decided they had to be simple with everything, and they couldn't just kind of continue doing what they were doing early. And they let the Steelers back in the game, and the Steelers defense made two plays on them. Jackson screwed up pretty badly twice, and they allowed a block punt. That's how the Steelers win these kinds of games. And by law of averages, you shouldn't be able to do this more than once a season, but it's like all of their wins now. It's remarkable and crazy, and I can't figure it out. I've tried for 2.5 years now. I just know that it will continue, and I don't think that they'll be able to do it next week either, and they probably will.
So, yeah, Jackson did some good things, but this is the part that baffles me. You get down to the 5-yard line, whatever they are. You know, and this is right before the Joey Porter Jr. interception, which is a good play by Joey. But how do you have a guy with the legs of Lamar Jackson and not attempt to utilize them there? To me, it's like I think everybody's trying to make him into this thrower all the time to prove to the world he throws the ball. He's been in the league long enough. He throws the ball decently, not great. And guess what? The guy can run. I don't understand why Baltimore doesn't take advantage of that when they've got a chance to put the game away.
The funny thing is that the play that I would look at that described that perfectly was the one that the Ravens won't admit it and they won't speak about it. But I believe it was the end of the first half. They had the ball inside the 20,
yeah.
Or maybe it was inside the 30. They wanted to get a field goal at the end. And for whatever reason, Jackson ran the play. I think it was on fourth down. Harbaugh obviously wanted to run the clock down while they're at the line in case, you know, the Steelers jump or something like that. Jackson snapped it.
Yeah.
And they're not blocked up for it. Watt was left untouched, which, you know, I don't know if they've paid attention. That's not the guy to let go free.
I'm trying to think. And yeah, you know, you might be right about that.
Watt immediately comes in and cuts off Jackson's running option.
Right.
And right there, it's like it's almost as if Jackson wanted to hike the ball so we could run, but even the defense wasn't going to let him run in that situation. Point being, you can tell Harbaugh on the sideline was amazed that the ball was snapped. It seemed to me like the ball was never supposed to be snapped. But it, at a 10,000-foot level, it was like it was the only opportunity where it looked like Lamar wanted to run the ball.
Right.
It's as if everybody is telling him not to, and I agree with you. He's a good thrower. He's not a great one.
Right.
He can do some damage with his arm, but his dual threat is what makes it who he is.
That's right.
And he did some stuff early. You know, yep. He got loose a little bit. It wasn't designed, but that stopped, you know, and it really kind of seemed more like, hey, Lamar, we're up. We're nursing a lead. Do not run the ball, okay? Don't leave the pocket. Do not run the ball. Because he tightened up. And the interception, good for Joey Porter Jr. He's right where he's supposed to be. He played that perfectly. But he's not going to get an interception in the NFL easier than that. I mean, wow. I don't know what was wrong with Jackson on that throw, but that was terrible.
Yep.
Mistakes like that lose you games. And it seems to me just pure speculation and observation. It seems to me like there's some type of mandate being put on Jackson to not run in certain situations. You know, not, and I don't even mean necessarily third and four, don't ever run. I mean, clock is this, score is this, quarter is this, don't run. We don't want you to run. These are the things we want you to do. But at the same time, when you have, you know, seven drops, five of them were just catastrophically bad, you need somebody on your team to you know, generate offense, and Jackson was the only guy that was doing that,
right,
and did a pretty good job of it. I, you know, cutting him loose seems to be kind of the way he wants to play. He's comfortable playing. I don't know why they do that, but the Steelers certainly thank him.
You have to play defense to your offense and offense to your defense. Well, in this case, we know the Steeler offense is treading water. Are they doing a good enough job, in your opinion, of playing defense to their offense? Meaning, look, I'll give you an example. We talked about Iowa a couple weeks ago. Iowa does everything in their power not to let any receiver get behind them. Everything. You can run a double move, they won't bite, they got to stay back. Because their offense can't make up for it. Are the Steelers doing a good enough job of playing defense to their offense?
That's a tough one. A game like Sunday, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Because they needed to get the ball back multiple times and they needed to not allow any points to give the offense absolutely every chance that it had. But it's such a spontaneous defense. They really work you to a point where you, as an offense, you've exposed yourself to the defense, allowing the defense to make a play on you. That's really what the defense did. Larry Ogunjobi, a veteran in the league, runs your skill guy down from behind and plays it perfectly, forces a fumble. He may as well have been T.J. Watt on that play. It's exactly what Watt would have done. It's obvious that it's an emphasis within their defensive room, but those kinds of things are offensive for the Steelers. Right. So my question is, not only are they setting it up for the offense, it's almost more like we're just taking over the whole thing because you're not doing it. And we've seen that in two wins this year. So it almost seems like by necessity, but other teams are allowing them to do it more so than the Steelers are doing it to their opponent. Maybe not that, but they are looking to make plays on the ball, and they're doing it in timely situations, as Tomlin would say, on weighty downs. They're winning those more often than not. At the same time, though, you see total collapses and lack of communication in games like against Houston, where you know, nothing is working for you, and you're not really fixing anything either. So in some cases, I believe they are, but there are instances in which they're not either. They're a dangerous play-to-play defense, but they're not showing that they're a very consistent one at this point either.
So the game on Monday night was Green Bay and the Raiders, and Garoppolo and Love, not a scintillating quarterback matchup, and it played out that way. What is your opinion, now that we've got five games under everybody's belt, what do you think the level of play in the league is, and how smart is the league right now in terms of how it is being played?
I think, overall, that's a really interesting question. I would say it looks better at the top the last couple this year than it has the last couple years. You watch San Francisco play, that's just a phenomenal team.
No doubt.
And I thought Dallas was playing pretty well. Mm-hmm. They boat raced Dallas. I mean, that wasn't competitive. San Francisco is at a high level. Now, typically we'll see, you know, the front runner kind of, you know, maybe fall off a little bit while Kansas City picks up and do their cagey veteran thing and figure out ways to win every game.
Right.
We're seeing more teams put up great performances early, I think, than we have in the past.
Yeah.
The bottom is odd because you look at Cincinnati, and with biased glasses on, no one is going to think that Cincinnati is one of the worst teams in the game. But through Sunday, fairly, they were.
Right.
That wasn't a fluke. It wasn't an accident. It's not just, you know, well, Cincinnati isn't playing well. They were bad. They played like a very bad football team.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the team that they kind of, you know, maybe got right a little bit against, Arizona, is playing 10 times better than I thought they would.
Right.
So in one way, I think there might be a little more at the top, but it really seems to me like the bottom is a lot better than it has been in the past. Arizona, you know, by rights and by roster, shouldn't have won a game all year.
That's right.
I mean, that was a legitimate prediction from a lot of people.
Yep.
You see bad play. We've seen in Denver a historically bad loss, and having to come back as much as they did the next week against Chicago, only to let it fall away. And Chicago themselves being a total train wreck. They just don't seem to be quarter to quarter, week to week bad the way we've seen in the past. So
right.
To me, it kind of seems like the bottom is a little bit better than it has been. And I think that increases some viability overall. Now, the follow-up question would be, why is Las Vegas on national TV so much? I have no idea.
I have no idea.
But that Packers-Raiders game was not – it was close. I'm not sure how good it was.
Right.
But Raiders are going nowhere fast, and that's kind of a maybe little bit of a surprise. But Green Bay probably won a little bit more early than what we're seeing them to be now. Not out-and-out surprises, but these aren't train wrecks either. I mean, Denver would probably be the leader in the clubhouse for the top pick as of right now. They seem to be the worst team overall. But I don't think, you know, 31 through 25 are terrible football teams either. That's just me.
Yeah. Any trend in the league that's a little different this year? I mean, there's always something where, like, okay, something becomes like with baseball. Suddenly out of nowhere, you know, every pitch is a sweeper. Okay, great. It's not a slider or a curve. It's a sweeper. Anything you're seeing that's a little different trend that everybody seems to be picking up on?
I think we hear... Put it this way, I think today's trend is the talking point of tomorrow.
Yeah.
And because of that, I really think the fact that an off season of consternation over injury, over pedigree, the fact that right now it's you can't to dilute it a little bit, you cannot have an MVP conversation right now without mentioning Brock Purdy.
Right.
The trend in that sense is look at how many high-priced, high-acquisition quarterbacks have completely fallen apart. You know, Cleveland versus Denver is going to be the joke bowl next season, the pace that those two teams are on.
Right.
Meanwhile, the literal last pick of the draft is arguably the MVP of the league.
Yep.
Now, we can go back between two or three people, and if it's not Purdy, okay, but he makes a very strong case. I know that. How is that happening? You know, do we want to go as far as to say it's no longer high-end quarterback stats, not this complete massacre of a game, an assault of Patrick Mahomes throwing four dimes against the Raiders in the second quarter alone? We're not seeing that so much, but Purdy operates in such a way that he's not making bad reads. He's not making mistakes. How is that happening? And we'll argue chicken versus the egg all day.
Mm-hmm.
There is a certain amount of talent that comes with that. But Trevor Lawrence, with a great coach, with a pedigree, who's played a lot more than Brock Purdy has, why does he still struggle? You know, to me, it kind of brings up, you know, the marriage of coach and scheme kind of seems to be more, of scheme and quarterback. It seems like that's, you know, tomorrow's talking point and whatever that might be, because put a point on all of it, Tua is the big gunslinging quarterback.
Yes.
Wasn't that the knock against him before? He doesn't have the arm.
Yep.
He's chucking up 40 points a game. And it's a great scheme. You know, it fits him very well. They went out and got guys to play within that scheme, and it's working very well. So to me, the question comes into in a really deep quarterback draft, in my opinion, how much emphasis will a team schematic philosophy go into drafting who they're going to draft? And along with that, what veteran quarterback that can't get it done anymore is going to be gone? And I guess the answer to me in both those questions is, you know, Caleb Williams in Denver.
Right.
What would they do together? You know, and it's almost like Sean Payton saw this happening.
Yeah.
in a way. I don't want to propose that. We'll hear about that plenty, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But schematically, you could see Williams fit within what Payton has done in the past, and they can build up around that and create, you know, the anti-Purdy in the sense of the first pick instead of the last, and go in and have a lot of schematic success because you got a player that fits very well in what you're comfortable calling, what you're comfortable coaching.
Well, and there's one other part, and I'll just make this quick because I know we're at the end here. Purdy had 4 years at Iowa State, played all 4 years. Okay, so all the great plays were on there, all the warts are on there. The flash in the pan guy that starts for a year and like flashes potential, the NFL seems to be drawn to that guy because there aren't as many warts. All right. And a guy like Purdy showed pro and con, and that's how I think people shied away from him.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I would also put there has to be a good amount of emphasis put on the fact that they're not done developing. I know it seems like they should be, and a lot of it is reference to Kenny Pickett, but they're going to continue to improve. They're going to continue to work and get better, and it's not just on the coach to do that. It is on the quarterback to do that. And I think Purdy should be commended for the fact that we've talked about this. You saw it immediately when he started playing with San Francisco. He is a way better player physically than he was at Iowa State.
Yep.
That's a fact. So he put the work in to become a better player. It's not just Shanahan moves the machines to these places and he knows to throw it here. He physically looked like a much better player, much more decisive. He had a much stronger arm.
Sir, always a pleasure, and you know that.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.